pointed to Quirm, the other to Ankh Morpork. He knew just enough to know that Ankh Morpork was a big city, but built on loam and therefore of no interest to the druids in his family. He had 3 Ankh Morpork dollars and some change. It probably wasn't very much in Ankh Morpork. He didn't know anything about Quirm, except that it was on the coast. The road to Quirm didn't look very worn, while the one to Ankh Morpork was heavily rutted. It'd be sensible to go to Quirm to get the feel of city life. It'd be sensible to learn a bit about how city people thought before heading for Ankh Morpork, which they said was the largest city in the world. It'd be sensible to get some kind of a job in Quirm and raise a bit of extra cash. It'd be sensible to learn to walk before he started to run. Common sense told Imp all these things, so he marched off firmly towards Ankh Morpork. As far as looks were concerned, Susan had always put people in mind of a dandelion on the point of telling the time. The college dressed its gels in a loose navy blue woolen smock that stretched from neck to just above the ankle, practical, healthy, and as attractive as a plank. The waistline was somewhere around knee level. Susan was beginning to fill it out, however, in accordance with the ancient rules hesitantly and erratically alluded to by Miss Delcross in biology and hygiene. Gels left her class with the vague feeling that they were supposed to marry a rabbit. Susan had left with the feeling that the cardboard skeleton on the hook in the corner looked like someone she'd known. It was her hair that made people stop and turn to watch her. It was pure white, except for a black streak. School regulations required that it be in 2 plaits, but it had an uncanny tendency to unravel itself and spring back to its preferred shape, like Medusa's snakes. The question seldom addressed is where Medusa had snakes. Underarm hair is an even more embarrassing problem when it keeps biting the top of the deodorant bottle. And then there was the birthmark, if that's what it was. It only showed up if she blushed, when 3 faint pale lines appeared across her cheek and made it look exactly as though she'd been slapped. On the occasions when she was angry, and she was quite often angry, at the sheer stupidity of the world, they glowed. In theory, it was, around now, literature. Susan hated literature. She'd much prefer to read a good book. Currently, she had Wold's Logic and Paradox open on her desk and was reading it with her chin in her hands. She listened with half an ear to what the rest of the class was doing. It was a poem about daffodils. Apparently, the poet had liked them very much. Susan was quite stoical about this. It was a free country. People could like daffodils if they wanted to. They just should not, in Susan's very definite and precise opinion, be allowed to take up more than a page to say so. She got on with her education. In her opinion, school kept on trying to interfere with it. Around her, the poet's vision was taken apart with inexpert tools. The kitchen was built on the same gargantuan lines as the rest of the house. An army of cooks could get lost in it. The far walls were hidden in the shadows, and the stovepipe, supported at intervals by soot-covered chains and bits of greasy rope, disappeared into the gloom somewhere a quarter of a mile above the floor. At least it did to the eye of the outsider. Albert spent his time in a small tiled patch big enough to contain the dresser, the table and the stove, and a rocking chair.
"When a man says, 'What's it all about then, seriously, when you get right down to it?' he's in a bad way," he said, rolling a cigarette. "So I don't know what it means when he says it. It's one of his fancies again."
The room's only other occupant nodded. His mouth was full.
"All that business with his daughter," said Albert. "I mean, daughter. And then he heard about apprentices. Nothing would do but he had to go and get one. Nothing but trouble, that was. And you, too, come to think of it. You're one of his fancies. No offence meant," he added, aware of who he was talking to. "You worked out all right. You do a good job."
Another nod.
"He always gets it wrong," said Albert. "That's the trouble. Like when he heard about Ogswatch Night. Remember that? We had to do the whole thing. The oak tree in a pot. The paper sausages. The pork dinner. Him sitting there with a paper hat on saying, 'Is this jolly?' I made him a little desk ornament thing and he gave me a brick."
Albert put the cigarette to his lips.